It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. If you're like me, you don't have a hard time remembering the days leading up to your first semester of college. There were many goodbyes to say and a lot of packing to do, and if you were traveling, hours in the car before moving into your dorm. These waning days of summer are normally the time of year when that transition happens, but an increasing number of recent high school graduates who had planned to start college immediately following high school are deciding not to enroll during the subsequent fall semester due to a lack of resources and guidance. It's part of a trend called summer melt. I'm joined now in Studio A by Dr. Lindsay Page, a professor in the University of Pittsburgh School of Education, whose forthcoming book is called Summer Melt, Supporting Low-Income Students Through the Transition to College. Lindsay Page, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks so much for having me.
Let's begin by having you explain what summer melt is exactly and how it happens.
Sure. So when we think about summer melt, we think particularly about students who get to the end of high school, and they're students who, at the time of high school graduation, we would call them a success. These are students who have identified college as the next step for them, they have applied to college, they've applied for financial aid, and their post-secondary plans, college plans, look to be well in place when they're walking across that stage at graduation. But for a surprisingly large share of those students, when we are able to connect their data from high school with data that tells us whether they've enrolled in college or not, what we find is that large shares of those students don't actually make that transition to college successfully. Large shares of students are dropping off in that summer right before they would become college freshmen for the first time.
And why is that happening?
So the reasons are quite complex. There are a lot of different things. If we can all think back to that summer before college, not only were we shopping for our dorm rooms, deciding how we were going to be decorating our rooms, meeting our roommates over the phone, now Facebook or text messaging, but there are a number of much more complex tasks that students need to navigate in that summer, students and their families, really. So for a lot of students, they may still be struggling with completing their FAFSA for the first time, so applying for financial aid to cover those increasing costs of college. Some students have to do additional steps in the FAFSA process. After filing their initial FAFSA, they have to verify a lot of the information that they've provided. And then there are a number of other types of administrative steps. You have to submit your housing paperwork. You have to take placement exams. For some students, they may get their tuition bill and be facing costs that they didn't necessarily anticipate. And so there are a lot of unknowns and challenging processes that students need to navigate over the summer. And what's interesting about this summer is it's a decidedly in-between period. So students are no longer part of their high school community. They've graduated. High schools are typically sort of closed up for the summer, but they're not yet part of their college community. And so if they have questions with these various tasks and processes, it's not necessarily obvious to them where they might be able to get support.
And as the cost of college has increased, how much more difficult has it become for low-income students to access and afford higher education? If you are thinking that the cost is going to be one figure, and then during the course of the summer you learn that, oh, I didn't factor in, even if you anticipated all of the tuition costs and fees, there are the books, there are, you know, all sorts of other costs that come up that you might not have been thinking about, and then you're faced with, oh my gosh, can I afford all of this?
That's exactly right. So there are a number of unanticipated costs that students see on their tuition bill. And as we began this work to really understand summer melt, and let me take a moment to just acknowledge that all of this work has been done in collaboration with my wonderful colleague, Ben Castleman, who's at the University of Virginia. As we really dove into this work, we were working in Massachusetts. And in Massachusetts, this may feel a little bit in the weeds, but it's an important detail. State law says that if a student is going to be going to a college half-time or more, then the cost of health insurance goes on that student tuition bill by default. And then students have to go through the active steps of providing proof that they have another qualifying health insurance plan so that that health insurance fee can be removed from their tuition bill. That health insurance fee can be upwards of $2,000. And so all of a sudden, if you're a student from a low-income family, if you really have to pool all of your resources to cover that tuition bill, and all of a sudden it's $2,000 higher than you were expecting it to be, that could really stop you in your tracks.
And it affects a lot of students because there are so many colleges in Massachusetts. A lot of kids from here go to college up there. I was one of them. So, you know, it affects a lot of people.
Exactly. And so in one of the things that we've been doing as we thought about Summer Melt, we've collaborated with a great nonprofit organization called USPIRE to be more proactive in providing support to students over the summer. And as we got into that work, one of the things that they really sought to do was remind students about many of the tasks that they have to do, but this health insurance task in particular. And in the USPIRE advisors that we work with, they really reported saving across all the students with whom they worked, saving students tens of thousands of dollars in just helping them navigate this health insurance waiver process. Mm.
Well, and there's a lot to cover about some of the things that you've done to be proactive in terms of helping students and what students and families can do for themselves. Has Summer Melt happened to you or someone you know? If so, how did you get back on track? We'd like to hear from you at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is essspgh@wesa.fm. You can reach us on Twitter at essspgh, hashtag EPLive. You may be going through some of these very same problems and challenges if this is the summer leading up to your first semester in college. Maybe you've decided to postpone college, or you're a parent who's encouraged your son or daughter to wait, or maybe you're helping them to navigate through those high policy weeds, as it were. Give us a call and share your story with us. 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. What difficulties did you have or are you having in deciding what you're going to do after high school? What helped you make up your mind? What helped you make informed decisions? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. How many recent high school graduates does this affect, Lindsay?
That's a really great question. So in using various data sources, we've estimated that on average about 10 to 20% of students who would be planning to go to college in the fall actually succumb to summer melt. And so if we look at the current rates of direct college enrollment, about 2.5 million students continue from high school to college with each cohort of high school graduates. And so if we put those two numbers together, the share of students who succumb to summer melt is large. Our back of the envelope is well over 200,000 students a year.
And when incoming freshmen pay a tuition deposit, it's assumed that they are going to enroll. But that apparently is not the case. And in fact, oftentimes students, even though they have made that deposit, get cold feet.
That's right. So, and actually the term summer melt, we've sort of repurposed the term. But where we first saw it arise was really in the literature and the conversations among college admissions officers. And they really thought about summer melt as, well, we expected a student to enroll in our particular school and that student show up. But the presumption was that, well, they didn't enroll in our school, but they just chose to go somewhere else. And so because we have been able to combine really newer sources of data and information to track students from high school into college, we're able to identify this previously unidentified problem that it's not that students are just choosing a different institution. In fact, they're not transitioning to any post-secondary institution at all.
And how do you do that?
So we've worked with a number of different partners to investigate this question. Really, when we began to dig into the question of to what extent is summer melt happening across the country? We were very excited to begin the work, and quite immediately we realized that a lot of the national data sources that look at students' educational trajectories didn't really give us the information that we needed. And so we've worked with nonprofit organizations that work directly with students. We've worked with various school districts around the country to take a particular school district. We've identified students who at the time of high school graduation indicate through something like a high school exit survey, I have applied to college, I have applied for financial aid, I'm planning to go to college in the fall, here's where I plan to go. So if a student is able to answer all of those questions in the affirmative and tell us where they're planning to go, we would identify that student as planning to go to college in the fall. And then there's a data source that school systems around the country, nonprofit organizations that work with students can connect their student records to. So this data source is called the National Student Clearinghouse. And the National Student Clearinghouse can provide school systems and other organizations with student-level information on whether students have enrolled in college, where they have enrolled, are they full-time or part-time students. And school districts increasingly are using data from the National Student Clearinghouse to better understand what the college-going outcomes are of their students after they walk across that graduation stage. And so by working with various partners around the country, we've been able to combine that high school-level information and that college-level information to look at the extent to which students aren't able to realize those post-secondary plans.
Again, our number 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. And I think we would also enjoy hearing from some students whose plans changed during the course of the summer. Maybe you were thinking about going to a college or university and then decided, nope, I'd rather go to a technical school. Or maybe you were planning on learning a particular trade in a school that provided you with some specific instruction in that area and suddenly changed your mind and thought, you know what, I may want to broaden my horizons in a different way and college is what's best for me. 412-246-2002 is the number to call. We heard in the previous segment, Lindsay, that Brian O'Rourke from Robert Morris University was saying that a lot of times it comes down to cost. But that's not always the reason why young people may decide to shift gears and change their career path or education path during the course of a summer.
Right. That's it is true that there are a variety of factors that come into play. One thing that I will say is that as we've worked with organizations to provide students with better support in that transition from high school to college, really, the vast majority of students, when they're struggling with issues over the summer, they are struggling with issues related to college financial aid and college cost, that they don't understand those financial aid-related processes, that they're dealing with unmet levels of financial need. And so cost really is a huge, huge factor. I think that there are other issues that are also in play. Certainly, there are when we think about 18-year-old students, they're influenced by the decisions that their friends are making.
Right. There's a real social aspect to a lot of this. You may, at that age.
That's right.
There may be relationships you're reluctant to break. You know, there's famous part of the story in American Graffiti where the Ron Howard character he's ready to go to college, but his girlfriend talks him out of it because she just doesn't want him to go away because she's not planning to go to college.
Right, exactly. So there are things like that. And then there are other seemingly small logistical issues. When we have talked with various counselors, advisors, organizations that work directly with students, there are challenges that students face literally in figuring out how they're going to get to campus in the fall. That they're all set to go to college, but actually affording the bus ticket, affording the train ticket, affording the plane ticket, or having mom or dad take time off from work in order to drive them. Those seemingly simple things provide real hurdles for students, particularly students who are first in their family to go, or students whose family the student is from a low income background.
And in the family situations, how much of the just when it, when it, a lot of kids articulate the idea that, oh, man, I'm so ready to leave home and be on my own. But when that moment of truth arrives, sometimes is it a challenge for some students who have to face the idea that, man, I'm really leaving home. Mom and dad, my brothers and sisters aren't going to be there.
I think that's right. So we've also in working on the book, we really had the opportunity to talk with a lot of wonderful people who work directly with students, and they shared a lot of stories of the experiences that students had. And a lot of the very poignant stories that were shared with us were stories about students whose families were in sort of precarious situations, where a student who was about to head off to college was really a key caretaker for a younger brother or sister. And so there was a real concern on the part of the student of what would happen to their brother or sister if they removed themselves from caring for that student. So I think that there are real weighty responsibilities that a lot of students have, that they're worried about what's going to happen if they do go away to college.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer on 90.5 WESA, and my guest is Dr. Lindsay Page, a professor in the University of Pittsburgh School of Education. She has a book coming out called Summer Melt, Supporting Low-Income Students Through the Transition to College. And we're talking about that trend and defining what summer melt is and how it prevents some students from reaching their goal of going to college. 412-246-2002 is the number to call if you have a comment or question. 412-246-2002. Email address esspgh@wesa.fm. And on Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EPLive. Does the data show who's delaying college more? Is it men or women?
So that's a really great question. I off the top of my head, I'm not going to answer that question overall, but I will talk in particular about some work that we have done in the Southeast United States. This was work that we did in Albuquerque. So one thing that we haven't gotten into our conversation yet was we've implemented a variety of different interventions to try to better support students in the transition from high school to college. And
some pretty tech savvy ones too.
That's right. That's right. So hopefully we'll get into that. But in work that we implemented in Albuquerque, New Mexico, we partnered with Albuquerque Public Schools is a really interesting sort of case study, because of students who graduate from Albuquerque Public Schools and go on to college, the vast majority of students either go to the Community College of New Mexico or the University of New Mexico. So those two institutions largely serve the students who come out of Albuquerque Public Schools. And we implemented an intervention there where it was really a partnership between the school district and the University of New Mexico, where school district counselors were stationed at the University of New Mexico and providing outreach to students, being very proactive to reach out to recent graduates who are intending to go to the University of New Mexico to check in with them on their plans. And there, what we found was that University of New Mexico is the flagship institution for the state, so the students who were planning to go there were highly qualified for college. And what we saw there was very high rates of timely enrollment across all groups except for Hispanic males. What we found was that, in particular, providing outreach from the college to Hispanic males who reported intentions to go to the University of New Mexico had a dramatic increase or had a dramatic impact on increasing timely enrollment for that group of students in particular.
And is there other data that shows along racial lines who is delaying college more?
So that's a great question. Rather than thinking about it along racial lines, we have focused more along socioeconomic lines. That even if we're able to isolate those students who at the time of high school graduation plan to continue on to college in the fall, we observe higher rates of summer melt. And this is one of the reasons when we think about inequality in the United States, it's one of the reasons why we should be particularly concerned about summer melt. We see much higher rates of summer melt among students from lower income backgrounds.
Who are the mentors who can encourage kids to stay on track and go to college?
So that's a great question. So one thing that has been particularly exciting about this work and that we write about in the book, not only talking about the problem of summer melt, but what's exciting is that there are a variety of low-cost solutions that can be implemented to better support students with this transition. And we have implemented a variety of interventions with a variety of different partners. And what's been particularly exciting is that across interventions, across partner organizations and types of mentors, we've seen positive impacts. So we have implemented interventions where students are receiving proactive outreach over the summer from advisors who work with nonprofit organizations that are student serving. So earlier I had mentioned the organization You Aspire. They counsel students in school districts on issues related to financial aid, completing all of their financial aid paperwork. So when we work with You Aspire, it's really extending that support that students receive during the school year to those summer months prior to college. We have also implemented interventions where outreach is coming directly from counselors in high schools. Counselors in high schools typically work on 9 or 10 month contracts, but this work involved extending their professional work into the summer months to, again, proactively reach out to students in the summer. And then one other intervention that we implemented was hiring near-aged peers, so hiring college students. There's a lot of opportunity for this, hiring college students to provide outreach to students, near-aged peers over the summer months to, again, provide them with support, remind them of the steps that they need to be taking care of, and helping them with that college transition.
412-246-2002 to join the conversation with our guest, Dr. Lindsay Page, professor in the University of Pittsburgh School of Education. Let's go to, I believe it's PED in Mount Washington. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Yes, sir. I love your program. Real quick, here's a question I have. What is the percentage of people who graduate from college? Because I remember there's a recent statistic that over 60% of people who go to college do not graduate, and they come out with a lot of school debt.
What, are you asking what is the percentage of minorities attending college?
Both. What percentage of minorities who attend and graduate, and gender? What's the percentage of just young people who graduate college?
So that's a great question. I think that one of the points that you're bringing up is that what we observe is that even of students who get through the door of college, there are large shares of students who aren't completing college. So these rates are really dramatically high. So in addition to thinking about summer melt, in our own work, we are also thinking about how to use some of the same kinds of outreach and support strategies to better support students to reach that important benchmark of degree attainment once they are in college. And so just to talk about a little bit of additional work that my colleague and I have been engaged in, one thing that we find is that there are large shares of students who complete their freshman year, and even though they look academically ready to continue on to their sophomore year in college, they don't do things like refile their FAFSA, reapply for financial aid. They miss the deadlines, or they don't realize that applying for financial aid is an annual enjoyment rather than something that you do just once. And so we implemented a similar intervention where, again, providing students proactive reminders. This work we did via text message. So sending students text messages to remind them that they needed to refile their FAFSA and connecting them to support to do that work. What we found was that this kind of very inexpensive, low-touch outreach increased first to second year college continuation by about 12 percentage points. So that's a dramatically large impact for a relatively low cost. I'm going to refrain from answering the question directly because I don't have those exact numbers off the top of my head, but I absolutely acknowledge that the rates of college completion among those who enroll are dramatically not where we would want them to be.
And you know, in addition to just sort of the keeping track of all of the myriad of paperwork and deadlines and things of that nature, are there other factors involved that are preventing kids from following up? I mean, how much of it has to do with your parents? If you have – I mean, my parents were a huge help to me, and I'm guessing that any student who has parents who are staying on them or just being proactive in terms of reminding their kids about what they need to do, that makes a big difference.
I think that's exactly right. So as we think about the various interventions that we've implemented, the key idea of all of these different strategies has been being proactive in reaching out to students, reminding them what they need to do, nudging them along.
And maybe compensating for the fact that a lot of students just simply don't get the help they need, whether it be from a mentor or just from their parents, who can make a big difference in a situation like this.
That's exactly right. So in thinking about all of these hurdles that students need to navigate over the summer, when we think about students who may be first in their family to go versus students whose parents are experienced in what it means to go to college, this is what we think of as one of the major differences, that students who are first in their family to go may just not have that supportive person nudging them along who knows all of the different tasks that need to be accomplished and navigated over those summer months.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. We're talking with Dr. Lindsay Page, professor in the University of Pittsburgh School of Education, whose forthcoming book is called Summer Melt, Supporting Low-Income Students Through the Transition to College. 412-246-2002 is the number to call to take part in the conversation. A number of students who attend college are, of course, not college ready. They need to take remedial classes, which can keep them from graduating on time. How does this show up in your research?
So that's a great question. In a lot of the research that we've done, this is unfortunately a piece that we have not been able to really dig into. And you know, this may feel like an unsatisfying answer, but it's really because of data limitations. That, you know, earlier I had talked about data from the National Student Clearinghouse. That data source lets us understand whether students are enrolling, where they're enrolling, but it's not giving us information about how students are doing in their classes once they get there.
Well, I'm sorry, Dr. Page, I'm just not satisfied with that answer. Understandable. If students stay out of college when that first opportunity comes up, what are the chances that they're ever going to go?
So that's a really great question. We have in some work that we've looked at where we look at the students who intend to go to college and don't enroll initially. We see some students enrolling subsequently, but that's not the case for the large majority of students. And in particular, among students who don't make that transition successfully, if we again differentiate students by socioeconomic status, we see continued non-enrollment more often among students who are from lower-income backgrounds.
So do you feel that your efforts in this area are paying off? And with your book coming out, Summer Melt, Supporting Low-Income Students Through the Transition to College, do you think that that will put a dent in this problem?
I think that's our hope. You know, across the different strategies that we have implemented, we've seen positive impacts. And there's a colleague of ours at USPIRE who would say to different organizations interested in this work, you know, don't worry about being able to put together the perfect program to think about Summer Melt. Really, the number one thing is that you get out there and that you do something, and that we think about how to be proactive with students during this period of transition.
And when you wrote this book, was it a matter of saying, okay, I need to come up with some sort of a guide here to help people? Or were there just things that you learned through your own experiences that made great stories and therefore great reading for people that anybody in this situation could relate to?
Yeah, so we try to do a couple of different things in the book. So first, we try to just define what Summer Melt is, explain why it happens. And then we did a lot of sort of collecting stories. You know, it's not my own story, really. My transition to college was quite straightforward. But talking with counselors, talking with students, talking with various folks who work in this college access field, and we were able to gather very rich stories of students who struggle dramatically during this period of time, but encouragingly, also the story of the great people who are working on the ground to better support students during this transition.
Stories that people could relate to and learn from.
That's right.
Dr. Lindsay Page is a professor in the University of Pittsburgh School of Education. Her forthcoming book is called Summer Melt, supporting low-income students through the transition to college. Lindsay Page, thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, a preview of upcoming fitness activities in the area. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.